There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Well, it was good to see that Tom Brady finally broke his silence about unretirement. He did that to ESPN, the worldwide leader, who basically asked him very few questions about what he really intended to do when he retired in the first place, man. Listen, I'm not going to wrap them too bad. Well, yes, I will, actually. This interview was really set up, I think, so that he could promote his Brady golfware. That's what this was about.
Well, he's got more golfware? He's got more things to sell now?
Well, you know, the thing about a clothing line is it's kind of like Barbie clothes. You know, you basically have something for every occasion and every event. So he has his workout stuff, and then he's branching into the golf stuff. He'll have his casual wear. Hell, I think before it's over, we'll probably have Brady formal wear. I don't know. But the clothing line is rolling out very slowly, and not a coincidence that June 1st he has, you know, the match with Aaron Rodgers against him and Aaron Rodgers against Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. So what a perfect time to, you know, advertise Brady's golfware. And so therefore he talked to one of ESPN's golf business writers, not Bob Herrig, who covers golf, but a golf business writer. And I mean, listen, he hasn't really, you know, aside from his multi-layered statement that kept shocked everybody 41 days after his retirement that said he was coming back, there wasn't a whole lot of meat on this bone. I mean, there wasn't a lot of new stuff per se, and that's because no one asked him, well, you know, what about these reports about Miami and stuff? And that was probably, I'm guessing, either A, it was a condition of the interview, we're not going there, and I don't know what B would be, except that, you know, maybe they asked and he declined to answer, although that wasn't in there. And I'm not rapping them for, you know, if it's a condition of the interview, would you not take the interview? I don't know. I mean, that's a tough call, right? Because he just hasn't spoken at all about this. But here's what he did say. And some of this is similar to what his statement was when he came out of retirement. He said, look, at the end of the day, I just love competition on the field. And I thought this was interesting. And last year was a very bitter ending to the season. And this is the part I like. And we've got to make a lot of corrections to try and improve ourselves in a better position and put ourselves in a better position to succeed moving forward. We have got to make a lot of corrections to try and improve and put ourselves in a better position to succeed. I wonder if one of those corrections might have been Todd Bowles taking over as head coach. You know, a lot of corrections. I mean, you did make it to the NFC divisional game. Yes, you did bring them back from a, you know, 24-point deficit, but you were, you know, a blown coverage away from possibly beating the Rams and playing San Francisco at home for the NFC Championship, which I think you would have won. So a lot of corrections, I suppose. I mean, he's a perfectionist, and certainly he knows more than's going on. He said that after he, you know, retired February 1st, he had been speaking with a lot of members of the organization that he had relationships with, including Bruce Arians, he mentioned, and told them that he had decided that he wanted to continue playing. Obviously, by then, the Bucs had made it clear they didn't want to trade his rights or anything like that. And so the start of free agency is really kind of what tipped it. You know, he realized, hey, if I'm going to play, I need to make this decision before all these free agents go elsewhere. Physically, not a surprise. He says he knows he can still play the game. He has a lot of love for the game. He always will. He thinks he can still do it. But he did allow that the end is near. And he said, I know I don't have a lot left. I really do. I know I'm at the end of my career. I wish you could go on forever. It's just not that way. And football comes at a high cost. Again, he talked about his kids getting older. how harder and harder it is to miss things. But he said, I wanted to give myself and my teammates and our organization another incredible opportunity to accomplish something that we'd all be very proud of, a.k.a. a Super Bowl championship, obviously. So, you know, a lot of things he just didn't get around to addressing, like the Miami Dolphins ownership group and all that. I mean, I'm not sure we learned a lot here, but I am curious about the many corrections he thinks they need to make.
Well, and we've discussed this a little bit. And if you go back through the season, and I won't get the exact comments right, but
yeah,
wasn't it Levante David talked about a lot of, well, he didn't say drama,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of, you know.
He's a turmoil.
Turmoil, that was the term.
Yeah, that's a lot, right. We went through a lot of turmoil.
A lot of turmoil. That. And sometimes you wonder, mm-hmm. you won the Lombardi Trophy. Probably ahead of what you,
one year ahead of what they thought they would. Yeah,
you brought everybody back,
all 22 starters, right?
But were they all fully engaged and ready to come back in the way that Tom Brady would be? To me, if I'm hearing him saying we need to make a lot of corrections, it's probably in the fact that not everyone may have been fully bought in, and not that they didn't try or care, but. Are you as hungry after you've won one?
I think that's a fair point. I think it's, you know, for Tom Brady, who has an insatiable appetite. I mean, he won six. He wanted seven. Mm-hmm. He's got seven. Mm-hmm. He wants eight. He's the guy who stole this from his equipment guy at Michigan. What's my favorite ring? The next one.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he cares about. He looks forward, not backwards. It's human nature, right, to sit back and enjoy the meal. You know, I mean, these guys... I mean, remember now, this is a franchise that had not even been to the playoffs in 12 years, right? They didn't even know what the postseason was. So for many of these guys, if not the majority of them for sure, except for the Gronks and some of the guys that came over, they had never even experienced what postseason football was. And here they go and they win a Super Bowl. They win a Lombardi Trophy. Oh, and not only that, they did it in their home stadium. They tore a piece of history with them. So, yeah, I think it's fair to question, you know, was everybody as hungry as Tom Brady, which is impossible to begin with. But, you know, they didn't know what it was like to defend one of these. They didn't know what it was like to have that target on their back.
I mean, most people aren't wired like Tom Brady.
No,
and
of course
that's
not.
What makes him the GOAT. And so, you know, I wonder if, and there's been reports of the rift between Bruce Arians and Tom Brady, and I don't believe it's a huge rift. Based on things you've reported and other things, and just knowing how Tom works and Bruce works in that too. But it doesn't mean that Tom didn't think that Bruce Arians maybe didn't push the right buttons or work them as hard as they should have this season. It's a bunch of veterans that all came back to, you know, from winning a Super Bowl, and that's not Brady's work. Maybe that's part of it. And this is me speculating. But, you know, the corrections may be the way we practice, the way how hard we worked in the off season, or some of the off days and things like that. That, you know, maybe Tom doesn't think it was run exactly right, and whether it's you know he wanted Todd Bowles or, but maybe you know a change is good in his mind. And I don't, you know, like I said, this is me speculating, but a lot of guys on the team had never experienced playoffs, let alone Super Bowl. And it's easy to kind of, you know, we won it, we're good. You kind of read your press clippings, and maybe you don't lift that extra weight one day a week in the off season, or you don't run quite as far, or, you know, whatever it is. I mean, you know.
Well, and you made the right point right there about the off season. I think a lot of it is sort of how you approach what happens. When you win a Super Bowl, and I've talked to the guys back in 2002, it's like, what happened to that team, right? Like, they were poised to win several. You know, and when you talk to Warren Sapp and others, they say, look, man, it was everybody for themselves after we won that Super Bowl in 2002. It was like, who can get a radio show? Who can get an endorsement? You know, Warren Sapp told me, he goes, we were focused on anything but football. Like, it was everybody for themselves at that point. I'm not sure that was the case last year in terms of, like, you know, all 53 players went crazy. But I would say this. Devin White had a busy offseason that had nothing to do with football. They did a movie about his life. He did a bunch of endorsements. I don't know if he came back in the best of shape. I don't know that he did or he didn't, but I sense that he probably wasn't in as great a shape as he had been prior to that. I know this. He didn't play well. You know, I had him pegged as a Defensive of the Year candidate. If Devin White had been the guy he was in the postseason, if he had started the year last year that way, they probably win more games and get the number one seed. And Devin will admit to you that was not his best year. It should have been, okay? You know, he really arrived in the postseason. He should have built on that, and he didn't. And opportunities come to guys, and there's no way you're going to have the same hunger or off. Your priorities change. You mean, and you can't fault a professional athlete or anyone for taking advantage of their platform, you know, of their opportunities, because they're going to fly at you if you're a Super Bowl champ. That's all part of being a professional athlete. But some guys handle it better than others, you know, and some guys are older than others. And I don't know that the hunger was there. Listen, nobody jaked it out there. They had a lot of injuries. I think the story of the season were the injuries. I don't think they were very well equipped to handle all at defensive back. They certainly weren't equipped to handle it all at receiver. And there were some things I think he didn't like what Bruce did. One of them, and I haven't talked to him about this, the whole Antonio Brown thing left a bad taste in Tom's mouth. And I mean, not just because of Bruce, but because of Antonio, you know, crying for the football at halftime of that Jets game. But the way Bruce Arians really summarily fired him at halftime, essentially, and he was off the team, you know, before they got to the locker room. I think that, I mean, regardless, whatever you think of Antonio Brown, combustible, low character, like whatever adjective you want to apply to him, negative or otherwise, the one thing he was a weapon. Tom Brady needed weapons, okay? He needed weapons to beat the Los Angeles Rams. And he didn't have Antonio Brown. And Antonio Brown, when he played, was really, really good. And so, you know, however that happened, whether he agreed with Bruce, I tend to think that he wished it had been handled different. Now, he's never said that. He probably never will. And in fact, Brown took Brady out, you know, after he was fired and said, well, Tom just wanted me to help him win Super Bowl. Well, duh. Of course he did. But Tom also genuinely cares about his teammates. And he
also threw
you
a bunch of pop passes to get you the bonus.
There you go. Right.
You don't think he was going to do that again this year?
Yeah, of course he would have. And, you know, the thing that rankled Brown, I still say, and look, I had a hand in this. I wrote the stories about the fake fax cards. He got suspended 3 games. 2 of those he wouldn't have played because he was hurt. But what it did was it put some of his performance bonuses in jeopardy, and he asked the team when he came back to guarantee them, and they said no. And he probably would have made most of, not all of them anyway, but it put him in a jar. His attitude was different. Coaches told me, he's not the same guy. You know what I mean? He's just not. He was churlish. He wasn't focused. He just seemed angry all the time. Like, he just wasn't that guy. And so, however that went down, like, you know, if you're Tom Brady and you're trying to find valuable weapons and you've lost Mike Evans and Chris Godwin down the stretch, and Godwin's out for the year, and you're winning games by throwing to Breshad Perriman and such, you probably really did wish that had gone down a different way. And I don't know that you're putting the blame on Bruce or somebody else. But so those are the kinds of things that would have upset him, along with the fact that, listen, and Bruce makes no bones about this. He gives all the credit to his coaches, and rightfully so. He was a CEO of this team. And he set the tone wonderfully, and they won a Super Bowl because of it. And they battled COVID, and he was the guy to make sure that no one got infected, and they had to beat the virus before they could beat anybody else. That was all Bruce is doing. But I think Tom's used to having his head coach more engaged on a day-to-day basis, not just driving around in a golf cart, not just speaking up in team meetings, but, you know, actually taking a role in game planning more than Bruce did. And the one thing we know about Bowles, even though he's, for starters, he's going to call the defense. He's got 2 co-defensive coordinators, but he's calling the defense. Oh, and he's also going to be in the offensive meeting rooms. He's going to engage with Tom. He's going to be hands-on and more the style that Brady is used to. And he comes from that Bill Parcells' tree, like Bill Belichick. He learned the defense. He learned a lot about football in Dallas when he joined Parcells, and then Parcells brought him to Miami and Tony Sperano. So there are some carryovers, but I just thought it was interesting. Like, you know, we had a lot of corrections we need to make. Well, we'll see what they are, because essentially they got a lot of the same players back. And you know, we'll get into the draft later this week, and I'll tell you a little bit of what Jason Light said. But, yeah, it again, not a lot of revelations, but it was the first time that he has spoken since he unretired, and we still don't have any clue what his plans were with respect to, you know, his life after football and if that involved the Dolphins in any way, because, frankly, ESPN either couldn't or chose not to ask him. So whenever we get Tom Brady, and I would suspect that the soonest would be the mandatory minicamp, probably more likely training camp, maybe we'll get a chance to ask, and that doesn't mean he'll answer, but it was, you know, it was an interesting story. You can check it out on TampaBay.com and in the Tampa Bay Times.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Also on Tuesday, Jason Light, the Bucs GM, gave his State of the Bucs draft press availability, and here's what we gathered from it. I was correct. They could move up. They could move down. They could stay right where they're at. They picked 27th, and you know, even Jason says, look, there's just a lot of waiting around. I mean, it could be 4 hours on next Thursday. That they're sitting there waiting for the 27th pick to roll around. Now, they have made a lot of trades in the past, and you can check this out on TampaBay.com, a story I wrote. You know, Jason Light, I think he's made 13 trades during his tenure here as GM. 9 of them he moved up, 4 of them he moved down. The most memorable, probably, I mean, other than Tristan Wirfs, who he moved up to get, which was genius on his part, getting an all-pro left tackle, but he also remembers the day that they dropped from 7 to 12 to take Vita Vea. And what was interesting about that is, I mean, Vea was like that guy that they were moving down for, and they just weren't really sure he would still be there. And so they're counting down, you know, 7's a long way, 8, 9, 10. And I guess they let out quite a bit of a yelp when they did, in fact, get Vita Vea. What is maybe, you know, not remembered about that is that the Buffalo Bills are the team that traded with them from 12 to 7 and gave up 2 second-round picks to do so. Oh, and they took a guy named Josh Allen. Now, you know, revisionist history, Jameis Winston was entering his third season, right? So they had invested a number one overall pick in him just 2 years prior to that, or 3 years prior to that. So they weren't ready to give up on Jameis, but oh my.
And Buffalo got ripped for that. A lot of people thought
that was taken
way too high.
Yeah. I mean, he was, you know, coming out of a smaller school and all of that, but boy, you'd make that deal in a heartbeat.
I know a certain big-time Bills fan that was hated that pick and now loves Josh Allen.
Oh, I bet. Cigar Dave?
That would be correct.
Yeah. I bet he loves it. If it weren't for some of the overtime rules, they'd have a Super Bowl already. Look, they could have gone last year. I thought last year was going to be their year, but it's coming. It's coming for sure. So, you know, Jason, like what I wrote about in the Tampa Bay Times is sort of how the status of Ndamukong Suh and Rob Gronkowski could affect the Bucs draft greatly. And I think they're two different situations for sure. You know, with Gronk, I think he intended to retire after Brady did retire, and then Brady kind of threw him and everybody else for a loop by coming back. And I don't think that Gronk feels any sort of pressure to make a decision before he's ready. If he's made one in his mind, I don't know. But he's not going to participate in the OTAs. And for that matter, hell, he might not even want to go to the mandatory minicamp I do think Brady is very persuasive, but it didn't stop Gronk from retiring once before. So it's not a slam dunk, but the fact that he's not signed now, I think what will be telling is, and they almost have to address it either way, you know, the Bucs have to get a tight end because they've got two on the roster right now. Cody McIlroy and Cameron Brate. Neither one of those guys are inline blockers. And even if you got Gronk back, right, he's only probably going to play another year. So you got to replenish the position. You need at least four probably on the roster, the regular season roster, more than that for training camp. So they have to address the tight end position. But with Gronk, I think they have to do it anyway. And they may have a better idea personally than what they're sharing as to what his ultimate plans are, if he's clued them in at all. But that'll be interesting to watch because there's some tight ends in this draft that they could be interested in. And then the other one is Ndamukong Suh. I think the fact that they have not signed Ndamukong Suh is a tell. And what I mean by that is, A, he's not going to play for free. You know, he's an $8 or $9 million a year guy the last 3 years that they've had him. He came out after Todd Bowles was hired and said, you know, hey, you might be one player short there or whatever, sort of lobbying to get back with the Bucks, which I think he'd like to be. But I think the fact that they haven't signed him, from what I've heard anyway, they want to get younger at that defensive tackle position. They did re-sign Will Golston, who can play a lot of those same roles that Sue did. But why wouldn't you sign Sue in advance of the draft? Well, because the best player staring at you might be a defensive tackle. And if you go that way, then you have to, again, kind of clear space for him to play. You don't want him sitting behind. This is not a situation with Joe Tryon last year and Jason Pierre-Paul. You're trying to win this year. You're not interested in green bananas. And that's why I think, you know, Brady's return sort of changes a little bit of the immediacy. Is like, you know, normally you're like, hey, let's do our draft. And you know, for the first year, if we can find a guy that can kind of help us and while he develops, that's cool. And maybe in 2 or 3 years, he'll be a starter. Maybe he'll be a starter the first year. But there wasn't that sort of immediacy with last year's draft. I think it's all right there now. I mean, I think they can't afford to have, say, for example, a Jalen Darden in this draft where you're expecting him to be a major contributor as a kick returner receiver, and he just doesn't show up. You can't swing and miss if you've got Tom Brady for one more year. So in a weird way, I think that, you know, there is an urgency to sort of what they do. And defensive tackle is a huge need, and there might be one down there at 27 that they take. And I just think they simply want to wait and see, you know, hey, if we get our guy, we're going to say goodbye to Ndamukong Suh. He's going to be 35 years old, or he is 35, and, you know, terrific player, Hall of Fame player, whatever. But I think they're ready to move on from that. If they don't address that position early, then maybe Sue then gets everything that he's commanding right now. But it's going to be post-draft, and I think what they do will affect, you know, sort of how they handle those two guys. Although, like I said, they need four tight ends. They've only got two on the roster, so they got to address that. You were at the Tampa Bay Lightning game against the Detroit Red Wings. I'll be honest with you. I thought maybe they might be looking a little bit ahead in this game. But
well, not in the first
off,
period. The first well, no, period, they opened
they
very
great.
Well. I mean, they didn't score.
It was 0-0.
But they dominated. I mean, Detroit barely touched the puck in the first period. The Lightning controlled all the possession, most of the shots on goal, and you felt really good. You felt like, hey, you know, Detroit was going. It really felt like Detroit was going through the motions in the first period. They're out of the playoffs, six games to go, whatever it is. And, you know, we're just kind of playing out the string here.
Which is what those teams do.
Mm-hmm. And I thought the Pat Maroon hit on Lindstrom right at the end of the first period. Yeah. Perfectly clean hit, legit hit. Detroit didn't react. They didn't go after Maroon. You know, I mean, it was a textbook check. But I think it woke Detroit up.
Mm.
I think they win that intermission and were a little ticked off and, you know, kind of the way they played, but it was also like, we're not going to,
pushed around.
You know, we're not. And I think they came out in the second period a lot better. Now, maybe part of it was just the way they played the first period. They didn't like that and would have come out regardless of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was another one of those games where there wasn't much hitting at all. And the Lightning just keep making mistakes. Particularly Mikhail Sergachev tonight. Two giveaways that led to breakaway goals.
And, you know, this is not a singular game situation for him over this stretch that's been, at best, sort of up and down, mostly down. He's played that way. And Cooper said after the game, he doesn't understand why guys, namely Sergachev, he didn't call him out by name, but that have played as long as they have together and have won what they've won would suddenly be making these mistakes. These are unavoidable errors. You're putting your goaltender in a terrible position. You know, Vasilevskiy, obviously they're trying to rest him a little bit and sort of, you know, save him for the postseason and get him as healthy as possible, but still play him the majority, I guess. And you're just not doing the guy any favors, man. I mean, like, I know they played a great first period. They didn't score, but they played a really good first period. But when you look up at the scoreboard and you're trailing Detroit 3-1, and the other night you were trailing a not very
good 2-0, 4-2.
Winnipeg team 4-2, going, you know, with a few minutes left in the second. Look, in the playoffs, you cannot start games that way. Hell, in the postseason, I don't know what the percentage is, but the team that scores first wins a hell of a lot of them. You know, so you can't afford to be down at home or on the road in the postseason. And this team, you look up and it's like, ah, here they go. They got to dig themselves out of a 4-2 hole, or, you know, and spectacularly they did it the other night and wound up going away. They won 5 straight goals and they won 7-4. But they weren't able to trench their way out of this one.
Well, they did. They got it tied to 3-3.
They got it to 3-3.
And then Sergachev made another.
Sergachev makes the turnover, yeah.
And when you have guys like Kucherov and Sergachev and guys that have high skill and are creative and can make plays, they're going to give some turnovers. They're going to have giveaways. You're going to have mistakes. I mean, that's just the nature of when you're making the moves they make. But there are times to make the moves and times not to. Mm-hmm. When you're at your own blue line, you're the last guy back. That's not the time to dangle the puck and let it get stolen. If, you know, it's understanding when to take those chances and when not to. And, you know, the Lightning have players that have been playing along, as Cooper said, long enough that they should know better. You know, we remember a few years ago, Kucherov got benched because he had 2 turnovers at the blue line that led to goals.
Well, and it might be time to do that with Sergachev. I mean, I don't know how else you get guys' attention, because he's right. They shouldn't be doing it. They played at the highest level. They won back-to-back Stanley Cups. They know the formula. They know the process that they talk about. And if they're not going to play the right way, then I don't know what options you have. But it just keeps biting them on the butt. No way. Steve, there's no way they should lose to that Detroit team. As you said, had nothing to play for at all.
Well, and you know, considering if you look at the course of the game, they outplayed Detroit in that game. I mean, they had a 4-minute stretch to give up the 3 goals, and one of those was a Sergachev turnover, and then the fourth goal, and the game winner ended up being a Sergachev turnover. But yeah, the way they play, I mean, and the frustrating part for Lightning fans, and granted, these games don't really matter right now or mean much, so whether this carries over in the playoffs or they can flip a switch. And, you know, and they did it last year. So I'm not saying they can't do it this year. But the frustrating part is you're starting to see the last week or two some really good things in their game. And you're starting to see, you know, locking down defensively better and the way they played in the first period and the way they played the whole second half of the Winnipeg game.
Well, and you know, Kucherov has come alive. Mm-hmm. He's scoring goals.
Yeah, you're starting to see that stuff. But then you get multiple turnovers to Detroit to lead to you know, unassisted breakaways, you know, and that's frustrating as a Lightning fan. And I think you have to give them the benefit of the doubt still. I mean, the loss tonight probably means that they're going to open on the road in the playoffs.
Yeah, they were fighting for a position. They got Toronto next.
They still have a shot to host the first round games. I mean, they're not going to catch Florida.
Right.
But, you know, but most likely now, I think they're 8 points behind Toronto with a game in hand.
Mm-hmm.
So you're probably going to start on the road in the playoffs, which they did last year. The Lightning have no problem doing that. The question is can you cut out those mistakes as you're getting down to crunch time? I mean, we're down to six games left for the Lightning.
Let me ask you this, because I really don't know the answer to this, but like I totally get, and I heard an interview with John Cooper before the game from the skate around. I heard that on the radio talking about, you know, trying to keep Vasilevskiy keep him as fresh as possible for the postseason and giving him nights off and, you know, still trying to, you know, kind of thread the needle between keeping him in his rhythm, but also recognizing that you hope to go deep in the playoffs. And so now's the last best time to sort of give him a break. I don't know that Vasilevskiy's playing with a lot of great confidence right now. And maybe it's because he's not confident in the guys in front of him, because guys like Sergachev and them are turning it over. I'm still seeing some goals that, and we've come to expect what he, the bar that he has set, which is incredibly high. But I'm seeing, I still occasionally see these goals that I think, that's not what Vasi usually does. You know, like, even if there's the occasional turnover, he'll stone somebody. And now everything's going in the back of the net. I don't know if he's hurt. I don't know if he's just kind of tired. There is something that's not the same in my, just to my naked eye. I have nothing to base this on, nothing at all. But he's not playing with the sort of confidence. And it might have to do everything with the guys in front of him aren't playing well. You know, that might be why he looks sort of out of sync.
What I look at more than the goals, you know, and like, you know, some of those tonight were breakaways and just great shots by the other team. I mean, you know, they're coming in at such speed, you can't cover the whole net. They pick a, you know, a tiny corner and get it through you.
Sure, sure.
The ones that concern me with Vazzy, because the one thing I think we've seen more of late that isn't typical for him, there's a lot more rebounds.
Yes, yes.
Like, he normally eats up so that the puck doesn't... I mean, that's what he does... I'm not going to say he does best of anyone, because...
He does it really well.
I think some of his athleticism is just freakish.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
He does not allow a lot of rebounds. Like, you better beat him clean.
Yep.
You better beat him on the first shot, because he's not going to... But lately, it sure seems like there's more rebounds being given up. Mm-hmm. He's not securing the puck. It's not... I have no idea if it's just mental fatigue, physical fatigue, something else. No idea. But it's something that we're not used to seeing from Vasilevskiy. I mean, we've seen games where he gives up goals, and particularly when the defense in front of him isn't playing well. I mean, that happens to goalies. You know, a couple nights ago when he got pulled in that game, I mean, those were three tip shots. There's nothing he could do about those.
Can't do anything about a tip shot.
I mean, not one goal in that game would you sit there and go, uh-oh, I'm Vazzy. I mean, you know, those are three beautiful tips. But it does seem lately there's more rebounds being given up, and that does concern me some, because you start going, okay, what is it? You know, is it just what he's going through now, or is it just really good shots that are harder to control, or they're getting more traffic in front, or is it the defense isn't getting him out of the way enough so there's that traffic? I mean, you know, there's lots of things that could be affecting it, but that's one thing. When you start seeing more rebounds, particularly, you know, right in front of Vasilevskiy, you know, he's pretty good at angling it all the way out to the boards and getting out of harm's way on shots he can't catch or, you know, stop, but when you see more rebounds right in front of him in the crease or just outside the crease, that's when you start going, that's not typical Vazzy.
Yeah. I don't know how to explain it. He just doesn't look like, you know, the same confident guy. And again, he set the bar for himself. We see these breakaways and we see him make these phenomenal stops, and he's still capable of it. But there's been the occasional un-Vasi-like goal that's been put up too, and all I know is that if you're giving up four or five goals a night, you have a tough time winning. Yeah. Man, you're not going to do that in postseason.
Now Vasi, you know, Cooper basically said, he said don't hold him to it, but Vasi's going to get the game Thursday against Toronto.
Yeah,
he's going to get Sunday at Florida, so Elliott will take Thursday or Saturday against Nashville, and then presumably Elliott's going to get two of the three games next week. So I would guess Elliott takes Tuesday against Columbus at home, Vazzy gets the Thursday at Columbus, and Elliott would get the Friday at the Islanders. So of the six games left, I think Elliott's going to get three of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I hope that's enough to keep him in rhythm. There is a rest versus rust sort of, you know,
there cost is. But if you are fatigued, whether physically or mentally, then the rest is more important than the rust.
Yeah, that's true. And if they're really not going to do a whole lot with their, you know, their playoff position right now anyway. So, but yeah, you just, if you'd have told me there, I just felt like they're going to pummel Detroit. I don't know why.
Well, Vasilevskiy was undefeated against Detroit.
Well, yeah, there's a good reason. And then the other reason was that, you know, the last game I saw, they scored five straight goals unanswered against the Winnipeg Jets. And I thought, okay, well, you know, bad period here or there, but like these guys are sort of starting to feel it. There was some physicality in that game that you liked. I don't know. It's like one step back, one step forward, two step backs. They still got some games left to try to get that momentum going, but these are not anyone can beat anybody, but these are not the games you lose. You know what I mean? Like, come on. You got Detroit at home. Don't give the puck away once or let alone twice. Don't put your goaltender in that situation. Don't be scrapping down 3-1, tying it up and then giving it away. It's frustrating, and it's got to be frustrating for them. But they also know that they still have time to, you know, play a couple good games, get a little momentum, and all that really matters at the end of the day is how they play in the postseason. None of this is – we're not going to look back and go, wow, remember that game they lost to Detroit? It's just not going to be something that we focus on.
Well, remember how bad they were at the end of last season.
Oh, they weren't good at all going into postseason. Yeah. They turn it on, and that's what champions do. So, meanwhile, speaking of champions, we'll end on this. The Tampa Bay Rays, we got a nice win over the Chicago Cubs with a whole bunch of pitching effort that they had to kind of spackle together. But they beat the Cubs. I think the final was 6-5, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Wander Franco, you know, there was some concern he was held out of the lineup the night before. A little bit of a quad strain. They gave him the night off. Well, it didn't hurt his swing because he goes 3-for-5 with a blast of a home run right-handed. And then, of course, switch hitting as he does. He also had a double. This guy's batting over 400. I'm going to say something. And if he stays healthy, if Wander Franco stays healthy, if he doesn't miss an extended period of time, I'm going to tell you right now, he's going to win a batting title. He might win it this year. And maybe that doesn't mean a lot to people. Like, what's a batting title? Like, it's more about home runs and RBIs and OPS and all that. He'll have those too. But this cat, like, when he's seeing the ball right, he barrels up everything. His outs are loud. They're screamers. Like, they had the shift on one time. He hit like a bullet to the guy in right field, you know, and it goes down as you know, 4-3. He's just such a good player, and they needed all of that and then some. They finally got the bats out a little bit, you know, on Tuesday night. And listen, it's still cold in Chicago. I think it was like, you know, warmed. Oh, it's warmed up. It's a nice day. It was 40 with a wind blowing like hell. So they're still bundled up in the seats. These guys are outside for the first time in a year, and they're playing, you know, in Chicago, first at the White Sox and now at Wrigley. I know what it feels like to try to play in that stuff, not very often, but it's not baseball weather, it's football weather. And at least, you know, they're back to 500. They have a chance to win that series today. That would be a big boost for them. And then they're on to Boston, of course, a big AL East rival. And, you know, we'll see how they do there. The weather's not great up there either. But it was a nice bounce-back win, I thought, for the Rays.
Well, and at the end of the day, you're a half game out of the division.
That's all.
Granted,
that's
all. Yeah. The other three teams that you're competing with are all the half game ahead of you, but
yeah,
you know, it's okay to get off to a 6-6 start if the other teams
if everybody else
are way
is.
Ahead of you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're not losing any ground at this point as you're trying to find yourself. And you're, you know, the cold weather games, the White Sox are a really good team.
They're going to win that division. They're a very good team. You'll see them again. Yeah.
Losing 2 out of 3 to them wasn't, you know, isn't something you're, you know, upset about. The Cubs are okay team. You'd like to take 2 or 3 from them. Mm-hmm. But it's on the road. It's in the cold, all that. The Rays, you know, they're trying to navigate through pitching right now because of all the injuries.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the bats need to wake up still. It's the defense that bothers me the most so far this season, that you just don't like seeing routine plays getting booted. And you know, I don't anticipate that continuing all season long. They're too good defensively to do that.
They played a much cleaner game, both defensively and on the bases, and I thought they were aggressive when they needed to be, and they pushed the envelope. But
base running's always been an issue on this team. But
I know they between the outs, the outs they run into is just incredible. But you know what? And Chicago came back and made it a really tight game. And hey, hats off to Andrew Kittredge, who, by the way, there are dudes you see with a beard. Like, I remember remember when Ryan Fitzpatrick shaved his beard when he was here 1 year?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he literally shaved and was like, who are you? Like, they look so different without that sort of trademark. To me, that's Andrew Kittredge right now. If he didn't have the same exact mannerisms on the mound and threw the same way, I swear to you, I wouldn't know it was the same guy. He just looks so different to me. It's funny what that can do, but Kittredge was terrific. I mean, you know, they could put that dude, they can start him. They can put him in the middle of the game. They can put him in seventh inning in a high leverage spot. And in this game, he closed it out. He pitched multiple innings. I think he pitched the eighth and the ninth inning. And he's just so good. Like, he's their dude in the bullpen.
Just
man.
Steady.
Oh, phenomenal.
Like, he's
strike
just consistent.
Thrower.
He's just consistent.
Yeah. You got to beat him.
Mm-hmm.
He's terrific. So the Rays will play. They'll wrap up that series today in Chicago. We'll of course have more on the Bucks and the draft, which is now just a little over a week away. It's hard to believe that it's almost here. As they pick 27th, they'll wait about 4 hours before they make that choice, unless Jason Light moves up, which he has done in the past. The Tampa Bay Lightning, what do they got? They got
Toronto at home.
Toronto coming up, yeah.
It's a tough stretch. They get Toronto at home, Nashville at home, and at Florida the next three. So those are three playoff teams at this point.
No, that's good.
Nashville hasn't clinched yet, but they're in a playoff spot currently.
Yeah. That'll be good. Hey, send in your mailbag questions. We'll get to those. You can do that online. Send them to us on Twitter if you want to, @SportsDayTB, @SportsDayTB, or you can reach me on Twitter, @NFLStroud. My email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. For Steve Burst and Montgomery Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.